Well, last week, I gave you a verse because we started on this new series called about the heart and keeping the heart clean and pure. And we said that we want our heart clean and pure because that's how God's presence flows through. And a lot of times it gets clogged with just stuff in life that happens. And so what can we do to keep our heart clean? So I said, one of the things I would like us to do is take Psalms 51:10 and just memorize it this week. You probably know it already and don't even realize it. But just take it and just take it to heart. And depending on the version you have, and I read to you out of the NLT and the New King James, but it says, create in me a clean heart, O Lord. Right? And I said, break that thing down. So like each day, think of one of the key main words in that phrase, like create. God, what do you want to do when you want me talking about create? Then in me. What does it mean in me? Create in me a clean heart, O Lord. And depending on the version, I chose NLT, and the reason why is I think the word there is really powerful, and a loyal spirit within me. Some versions, like maybe the King James, says a steadfast spirit within me. Or maybe another version may say a right spirit within me. But create in me a spirit that's loyal. Because it's so easy for my heart to wander here and wander there. Lord, I want a heart that honors you. I want a heart that's hungry for you. Even though I've lived a long time, I want a heart that's still passionate about you. I don't want to become bitter, grumpy, and old. I want to have a heart that's tender towards the things of God. God, give me a heart. Create me a clean heart, O Lord. A heart that is loyal. A heart that is steadfast before you. Create in me a clean heart, O Lord. Today, we want to start just, as the pastor does, go a little bit to meddling. I want to give you some areas. Some things that sometimes clog up our heart. The key is, as we go through this, is to have a clean heart. That's the purpose. Just remember that as we look at different things that can clog our heart. But as we look at that, maybe as we go through some of these, you'll go, oh, wow, yeah, I didn't even realize that this was clogging my heart. But now that we've gone through it, I realize, man, I got a part of my heart that's clogged and it needs to be unclogged. I really didn't even think this was an issue with me at all. And now I saw it, I go, oh, wow, there's an issue there that needs to be dealt with, right? Today we're going to look at guilt. Because guilt is one of the things that can clog our heart and we don't even realize it. There's a writer you probably remember from school, maybe in high school, Edgar Allan Poe. He has some weird stuff. If you're down in Sullivan's Island, there's a great restaurant called Poe's Tavern. They got the best hamburgers in the world. That's free of charge. I'm just throwing that out to you. I mean, they got some really good, and they got ravens everywhere. But Edgar Allan Poe wrote this short story. It's not normal, but it's a story, short story. It's about 5 pages long, and it's called Tell Heart. Anybody remember it? Yeah, you remember studying that in school? It's a story about a man who committed murder and killed an older man and buried his body underneath his house. And he was sitting at his kitchen table. And he just began to become overcome with guilt. And he started sweating just a lot. And he started feeling like he could hear the heartbeat of the man that he killed underneath the floor coming up. And it kept beating. Ba-boom. And it wouldn't stop until he realized it wasn't the man's heart beating, but it was his heart that was beating. I know that's an extreme, weird story, but that's how guilt is. It affects the heart, and it keeps coming up over and over again. Guilt doesn't go away. Sometimes it will keep us up at night. Sometimes it will cause us to not eat at all because we feel guilty. Sometimes it will cause us to overeat because we feel guilty. It can keep our minds distracted. Where does guilt come from? It comes from having done something wrong, or we perceive we have done something as wrong. When I do something wrong, if you're normal, you experience guilt, right? It's just the natural thing to feel. Let me put it in simple terms. When we have wronged someone, we then owe them. When we have wronged someone, we then owe them. At the very least, we owe them an apology. Right? So the only way to make things right, at the very least, is to ask to apologize, to say I'm sorry. Since I'm doing extreme illustrations, let me give you another extreme illustration. Think about a man who leaves his family for another woman. He doesn't think about it at the time, but he has stolen something from every member of the family. He has robbed his wife of their first marriage, her future, her financial security. He's even damaged her reputation. He's robbed his children, their opportunity to have a father at home, opportunity to play wrestle in the living room, go to ball games, or go to dance recitals, or go to father-daughter dances, or all those things that dads do. Dad doesn't think about that at the moment. He's only thinking about a new woman that he's entertaining. He's only thinking about the happiness for the short term. And that's what all sin does, right? It's a short-term happiness. But then comes that moment when the son or the daughter says, "Dad, why don't you love mommy anymore?" And then the dad will many times respond with, "Don't worry, Daddy will make it up to you." Why? Because Daddy feels guilty and he feels like he owes them. Right? That's what guilt says. Guilt says, "I owe you. Because I've wronged, I owe you. I will make it up." I know that's another extreme illustration, but one we may have witnessed. Ask yourself this morning, do I owe someone? Who do I feel like I need to make it up to? Almost all parents struggle with this. Because there's no such thing as a perfect parent, right? For some of us, maybe we worked long hours and we had to provide, or we were busy, or maybe we felt like we're too strict, or maybe we felt like we weren't strict enough, or do we do this right, or do we do that right? And then we feel like we're in debt to our children. We owe them. Or maybe it's just simply as a neighbor that maybe we borrowed something from a neighbor, and once we got it, we broke it. Or we lost it. and we feel guilty, and we feel like we owe them. Or maybe it's doing a job somewhere and we took advantage of the situation and charged a little bit more just to make a little bit more. And we feel guilty and we feel like maybe we owe them. There are all kinds of illustrations I could use, but really that's between you and God. Ask yourself through the Holy Spirit, man, is there someone that I owe? Because my desire is to create a clean heart within me, O Lord. And I don't know about you, but guilt, man, can eat you up. You know? Even like you just, for a moment, get upset and lose your temper at someone. And you just feel guilty, you know? It just kind of sticks with you. And because when you owe, you become the debtor. Just like it's not a good thing to be in debt financially, it's not a good thing to be in debt relationally either. There's an old proverb that comes from Proverbs 27:7. It says, the borrower is slave to the lender. And we generally think about that as far as money. But that's also true in relationships. The borrower is slave to the lender. When you wrong someone or you've done wrong, it can affect someone else you're living with, that guilt. It puts the person you wrong in higher authority or higher ground. So what happens is we overcompensate to try to make up for it. If you're a parent, you can easily end up with a spoiled child. If you're a worker, you may have a hard time standing up for what is right. If you're a spouse, it's easy to give in. It's easy to always try to make it up. If you're a man, to never lead because you feel guilty. Whatever the case may be, the relationship is not a healthy one. There's a story in the Bible that I preached on before. I know you know it. You should know it well. If not, let me just clue you in real quick. The story is of Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was a man that was really bad and evil. He was cunning. To me, he was the boss hog of his day. Remember the Dukes of Hazzard? That's who I picture Zacchaeus every time I preach on him. That he would do anything to make a buck. He would do anything to make a few dollars. And that he did. He worked as a tax collector. And tax collectors in that day had to charge people for their taxes. When they brought goods into the city, they were charged a tax. And the Romans had a law and a wage scale, and they charged by a certain amount. But a tax collector would then charge additionally amount of money to add to that. Even though he was already paid by Rome, he was going to charge a little bit more so he could make a little bit more. And so he must have done really well because he wasn't just a tax collector, he was the head tax collector. And I believe Zacchaeus was the kind of person that would, if he could make a few dollars even off his own mother, he would have done it. That's how low down he was. Zacchaeus had treated so many people unfairly. His family, his friends, his neighbors, the people in the town that he knew and that he saw, that he was having a hard time because of all the thievery. This man was like the man in the story of Edgar Allan Poe. He was living with a ton of guilt. He knew that because of him, there were people that were living in poverty. He knew he could not escape people he had stolen from. He would see them over and over again. His sin and his guilt was destroying him. He wanted to know, can I be forgiven? Can my guilt be taken care of? I mean, he heard stories about Jesus forgiving all kinds of people. Could Jesus forgive me? So when he heard that Jesus was coming to his town, you know the story is so short, he had to figure out a way to see over the crowd so he could see Jesus. So he climbed that sycamore tree. To me, that's one of the most boss hog things ever. He climbed the sycamore tree. And we read in Luke 9 that Jesus stopped and he saw Zacchaeus. He said, Zacchaeus, come down that tree, for today I'm going to go to your house and have dinner with you. We don't know all what happened at that dinner because Luke doesn't tell us everything. But at some point, Zacchaeus must have asked for forgiveness. Because when we read in verse 8 in Luke 9, it says, but Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, 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 here I am. Now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Verse 9, Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to the house. This man too is a son of Abraham. Verse 10, for the Son of Man came to seek and do what? Save the lost. Notice what Zacchaeus did. Not only did he confess his sins, but he went back and found those that he had cheated out of money and repaid them back four times the amount he owed them. That is called an open confession. There are two types of confessions. One is a private confession, and the other is an open confession. A private confession is when you take it before God and you say, God, what I've done is wrong. Would you forgive me? And God will forgive us because of the blood that we sing about this morning. But there's an open confession where not only do I ask God to forgive me, but if there's somebody I've wronged that's causing me to feel guilty, I go to them and I ask for their forgiveness as well. Jesus said that we must do both in order to experience the freedom of being forgiven. In Matthew 5, verses 23 and 24, these are Jesus' words. Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother or sister has something against you. In other words, man, you've done something wrong. There's an ought there. He says, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come offer your gift. I can imagine some of the Pharisees, as they heard this, were thinking, and maybe some of the others that were thinking, going, what? You mean, you want me to go, once if I get my lamb that I bought, or my dove that I bought, or whatever animal that I bought for the sacrifice, and I'm standing in a long line waiting my turn to offer my sacrifice, to all of a sudden get out of line, take my animal, go find that person, ask for forgiveness, and then get back in line? That seems a little extreme, doesn't it? I mean, that seems a little bit odd. Just to make someone make peace with someone who I may have offended, who may be mad at me, or may not even know that, may not even remember that issue, right? It's not only a new wrinkle to the law, but extremely inconvenient. Anyway, the Pharisee may say, isn't God more concerned about our relationship with him than with other people? Yes, but Jesus is telling us that our relationship with other people matter too. Jesus is telling us that our relationship with God hinges on our relationship with others. It seems, according to Jesus, you can't separate the two. You can't just love God and not love people. Right? You have to do both. You know, our vision is to love people, or love God and love people and change the world. You can't do one without the other. Jesus is saying that you can't worship God with a clean heart if you have issues with other people. He's saying the truth is you cannot resolve your differences with God as long as you have differences with others. You can't be in fellowship with God and be out of fellowship with other people. That you have to have both. Can I tell you, part of walking with God, part of having a clean heart, is setting up that awkward meeting with someone that maybe you felt like you offended or hurt, and you feel guilty, and you go say, would you forgive me for what I've done? Years ago, when we were pastoring, one of the bravest things I ever saw, and one of the men who I loved, I really loved a whole lot more. This story is not about me, but about him. When I first went to pastor the church there, I was young, I was in my early 30s. And he was an older man. And he was on the board, and he wanted to do things his way, I'm sure. He probably felt like, you know, this young guy, what can he teach me? How can he be my pastor? I'm sure. But he was an ornery little older deacon. He was always trying to get going, and like, I mean he was, I mean, we were small when we first started there, and like, I mean, the, like, we couldn't even give out, we couldn't even send the tithing envelopes through the, or the tithing record through the mail, because he didn't want to waste a stamp. Like, back then, stamps were only like, you know, 20 some cents, right? Like, each valuable member in our church isn't worth 20 cents to send them something in the mail. We had to hand out everything at church. So, you know, I tried to go around him to his wife and different things, you know, to kind of get it till we finally were able to do that. But I'll never forget one Sunday, he was sitting probably right about three rows back maybe, on that side. He always sat in the same place, he and his wife. And so we were doing worship, then in worship, he said, Pastor, I need to say something. I thought, oh no, what is he going to say now? There's no telling. He said, I just need to tell you guys something. He says, I've been giving our pastor a hard time because I thought he was too young to pastor. And I've really been ornery about this, and I've done some things I shouldn't have done. But I want to clear the air. I love this man, and I want to ask him for his forgiveness, and I want to ask you guys for forgive me as well. For the things I've done. Whoa. I mean, that was a watershed moment. The whole church started crying. I started crying. We all started crying. Right? I have a whole lot of respect for that guy. I enjoyed when I got to do his funeral. Because I know that his heart is clean before God. What I'm saying is, when that's there, and that guilt's there, it will keep you and hinder you from coming before God. There's a movie that came out several years ago called Courageous. Maybe you've seen it. It's a Christian movie. Like all Christian movies, it's a little dorky, but it's a good movie. If you get a chance, rent it and watch it, especially if you're a dad. It'll touch your heart. And I was watching the movie, and it was getting near Father's Day, so I was already thinking about preaching a Father's Day message and that kind of thing, and thinking about dads, and thinking about my dad, thinking about me as a dad, all those kind of things. And I was watching this movie about a dad and his struggles and blah, 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 blah. I just began to man, I could just start seeing all the times I blew it in front of me. Because there are no perfect parents. I know you think I'm perfect, but I'm not. I do not walk on water. I do have a temper. I do sometimes blow it. And I remember watching it, and I just began started weeping and crying as it was starting to end. And so, you know how it is, like, one's watching the movie with me. I mean, they're all three grown now, but one was, maybe two are watching, the other was in another room. So I caught them all together at the end. And I just took a few moments, and I just said, I'm your father, but I haven't been perfect. I need to ask your forgiveness. And I just started going through the different times I blew it that I can remember. And I said, would you forgive me? Would you forgive me? Would you forgive me? And man, they were crying. I was crying. We all had to do like a group hug, you know, at the end. Which if you know me, I rarely cry. That's not something I do very often. Because I want to keep my man card this morning. But it's not something I do very often. But man, I had to that morning, that night. Because it was just weighing heavy upon me. Sometimes our biggest failures as parents are the opportunity for our greatest lessons to be taught to our children. Because when we ask for forgiveness from them, we're teaching them how to ask forgiveness from others. We're teaching them to realize not everybody's perfect. And we're all willing to say we blow it from time to time. And we've got to be willing to apologize one to another. It's part of what's missing in our culture today. Nobody ever says, I'm sorry. No one ever says, I blew it. Would you forgive me? And so let's just keep going. Let's just keep going. Let's just keep going. And what happens is we keep going and the guilt keeps building and building within inside of us. And it begins to clog our hearts. And we don't even realize it. And we'll just not only confess our sin before the Lord, but if we've hurt or offended someone. Now, not all the times you can do that. I get it. Like when the person cuts me off in the road and I beat my horn at them and give them a mean look, I can't find them again to say I'm sorry. Or maybe it's a parent that's already gone. I can't get a hold of them and say I'm sorry. I can take a letter, though, and write down something on a piece of paper, even though they're not here anymore, asking for their forgiveness and then tearing it up. Because I don't want that guilt clogging my heart. I remember a long time ago when I was a teenager, older teenager, but I was going to a church, and I was being part of their youth group, and the youth pastor's wife was a short little lady, and we were playing volleyball because we always played volleyball before youth started, and somehow I just got high enough to slam the ball over the net and hit her like right dead in the head. And you know how a guy is. I went, rawr, and stuck my tongue out at the same time. And I think I shattered her little world. Because I just saw a look on her like I'd never seen before. Like, man, like, it's like I just went and slapped her or something. I was a teenager. I didn't really think anything. But that moment really hit me. And I was like, man, I feel so bad for what I did. I felt so guilty. And sometimes I'd be in worship and I would see that face. And I feel so guilty. Until I one day told her. Because at one point in my life, I was in it working for her husband. And I told her, I said, okay, you remember that time I did blah, blah, blah? No, I don't remember. Well, I remember. And it really hurt me because I was really ugly that moment. Would you forgive me? And that released me of that pain. Because there are times I literally had nightmares over that thing. And that released me of that pain. What I'm saying is, when we hold on to guilt, it doesn't do us any good. One of the ways, going back to Matthew 5, 23 and 24, if you'll put that one back on the screen again. But going back there to Matthew 5, 23, it says, therefore, if you have an offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and reconcile to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. I imagine, as they thought about that, they thought, well, if I'm going to follow this, I'm not going to get in line with my lamb or my sheep and get out of line. That's too hard. That's too difficult. It's better for me, what Jesus is implying, to do it right away. Then wait until you get all the way to the church, or wait until you get all the way here and go, oh, man, and then go back and do it. But if you have to, do it. But he says, you know, it's probably better to do it before you come to church, right? It's probably better to do it right away. What happens? What is it like when you confess? Oh, there becomes pure joy. There becomes pure freedom. Because the borrower is no longer a slave to the lender. There's joy. David describes it so well in Psalm 32. Psalm 32 is a companion of Psalm 51. Psalm 51 is when David confesses his sin before God. Psalm 30 is how David felt after he confessed his sin and found forgiveness through Christ or through God. In Psalm 32, beginning verse 1, David says, oh, what joy for those whose disobedience is forgiven, whose sin is put out of sight. Yes, what joy for those record the Lord has cleared of guilt, whose lives are lived in complete honesty. That's what a pure heart is. That's what a clean heart is. It's a heart that is lived in pure honesty. What David is saying in these two verses is, man, when I come clean before God and others, man, I can celebrate. There's joy because I'm no longer guilty. I'm forgiven. That verse, there's now no longer condemnation of those in Christ Jesus. That applies to me. I'm forgiven. Praise the Lord. Verse 3, when I refuse to confess my sins, my body wastes away. I groan all day long. That's what he's describing, how bad it is when you're living with the guilt. For David tried to hide and cover his sin, and he lived with the guilt. Day and night, verse 4, your hand of discipline was heavy on me. My strength evaporated like water in the summer heat. Selah means pause. David's saying, man, it was not good. It was bad. He says, it was affecting me. Verse 5, finally I confessed all my sins to you and stopped trying to hide my guilt. I said to myself, I confess my rebellion to the Lord. And look at this, and you forgave me. All my guilt is gone. David's sin of adultery, David's sin of murder is all gone because he confessed his sin before the Lord and confessed it openly in public. Man, he is forgiven. He's saying, what joy that is. Verse 6, therefore, let all the godly pray to you. He's telling us, man, pray to God while there is still time, that you and I may not drown in the floodwaters of judgment. David is encouraging us to ask for forgiveness when we have wronged others. Verse 7, but you are my hiding place. This is what God does. You protect me from my trouble. You surround me with songs of victory. Verse 8, the Lord says, I will guide you along the best pathway for your life. I will advise you and watch over you. Don't be like the senseless horse or mule that needs a bit or a bridle to keep it in control. He's saying, lay down your pride. Don't be like that mule who wants to go his own way. Lay it down. Many sorrows come to the wicked, but unfailing love surrounds those who trust the Lord. So rejoice in the Lord and be glad, all you who obey him. Shout for joy, all you whose hearts are pure. In other words, who are clean. Create me a clean heart, O Lord. So the thought is, if I want to have a clean heart, one of the things that can clog up a clean heart is guilt. Because if I hurt someone, then I owe them. And I know I owe them. And it makes me feel guilty. How can I release that guilt? By asking for forgiveness. By coming before God and saying, God, I blew it. Again, forgive me. And then going to the person I offended and saying, would you forgive me for being a fool or doing whatever I did? That keeps my heart without guilt. It gives me the boldness to do what God has called me to do. It gives me the boldness to lead. To lead my family, to be a part, and just to follow after the Lord. Having a clean heart. Lord, create me a clean heart, a spirit that is loyal to you.